is 4-State Focus. News Radio 930 WFMD talks to newsmakers throughout Frederick and surrounding counties.
And welcome into the show. I am your host, Ryan Hedrick. I hope you're having a good weekend. This is the second weekend in a new year, new beginnings in Annapolis, because they just began a new session, a 90-day session in Annapolis this past Wednesday. And we're going to dissect what's going on so far and what we can expect with Senator Justin Reedy of Carroll County, our home away from home, Carroll County. Many great things, a lot of great listeners in Frederick County, including the Mount Airy area. Senator Reedy, thank you so much for making time for us this week, and we appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. So talk a little bit about your district. What district do you represent? I know it's District 5, but what does that mean?
Yeah, so the current district is basically, if you know Carroll County, it's basically anything above Route 26 in Carroll County, Liberty Road, is in my district, with one little exception. I don't currently have the city of Mount Airy, but I have some of the neighborhoods just north of Mount Airy, and I have Taylorsville and Winfield area, some of Woodbine. The district has Westminster, Tawnytown, Union Bridge, New Windsor, Hampstead, Manchester, and Finksburg. So it's a pretty big district, and love representing Carroll County. The next round of redistricting is now. It's possible that I might end up representing all of Mount Airy, depending on how these lines end up falling. So definitely love Western Carroll County, and we love Frederick County too. Of course, my wife and I, we love going to the Catoctin Mountains and coming over to Frederick. So it's a great area of the state that your radio station's in and that I get to represent.
Yeah, thank you so much for that. And you're right, Frederick County, Carroll County, both great places. And you've been serving Carroll County in various capacities. You were a member of the House of Delegates from 2011 to 2015. How does your job as senator now differ from your responsibilities back then?
Well, you know, both of them are legislative positions, and I was honored to serve in the House of Delegates, and I was actually reelected and then was appointed to fill most of the rest of a term of a senator who was appointed to go into the governor's administration at the time. The House is more people, so the body is different in the sense that you're one of 141, whereas in the state Senate, you're one of 47. So in the Senate, there seems to be maybe a little more scrutiny. You have every committee, when you're on a legislative committee, you get more issues because there's fewer committees. You have to have a kind of a wider sort of scope of issues that you have to be ready to tackle on any given day. But both bodies, the House of Delegates and the Senate, are great places to serve. I would like for them both to be a little bit more balanced politically. Republicans are in a deep minority in both the Senate and the House of Delegates, and I think that sometimes leads to bad policy. A lot of times leads to bad policy outcomes. But it's an honor to serve the Senate in the Senate, and it was in the House as well.
Maryland State Senator Justin Reedy from Carroll County joining the 4-State Focus show right here on WFMD and WFRE. And you brought up my next point, a seamless transition to the personalities involved behind some of these policies. A good friend of mine, Dr. Brenda Cham from Hagerstown, is serving in the House of Delegates right now. She said it is almost impossible for Republicans to get anything done in Annapolis. Senator Reedy?
Well, I love Dr. Cham is a great person, and she's somebody who is very passionate advocate for a lot of the same issues that I am. It can be difficult to have structural change right now as a Republican in the legislature. I feel that we're able to be effective in more specific and tailored policies. Being an effective legislator is more than just whether you can pass a big bill or not. We don't often, it's true, Republicans don't often get to be the ones who pass the major bill on an issue. But as we are active in both our committees, where bills go to be amended and to be heard and analyzed, where Republicans can be most effective is engaging in the nitty-gritty of that process, knowing the policy, knowing the issues, raising points that make the other side have to think about what they're doing, and then offering great arguments on the floor as we debate issues. It can have an impact. I've been able to get some legislation through in the last few years that I'm proud of and think made a positive difference. At the same time, I understand her frustration, and I've had the same frustration that sometimes really good ideas are rejected out of hand because they don't match sort of the ideological bent of the General Assembly members on the other side of the aisle. And it's pretty far left at times. So certainly it's a challenge. It can be frustrating. But I also think we have to be in the fight every day. You know, we're there to represent the values of our constituents and the things that we know are the right thing to do. And that's to me, I feel that it's a success when we can do that. Sometimes the end result isn't what we like, though.
Right. And, you know, last year we dealt with police reform. Now we understand that each municipality has to have some type of police accountability board. And you know, my position on this is very clear. When politics meet law enforcement, the waters get murky and they get rocky. And a lot of police officers think that, you know, some of these accountability boards are going to lead to people not wanting to be police. Senator Reedy, what is your position on the police accountability boards that each municipality has to come up with and police reform in general?
Well, I was I engaged in the process because it's whenever big issues are presented in Annapolis, your job as a legislator is to engage and understand what's going on. The Democratic majority in the General Assembly went to the extreme on so-called police reform. You're talking about accountability boards. I don't think too many people have a problem with an actual accountability board. The way that bill got structured, though, there's a lot of issues with particularly small municipalities trying to have a say in what happens, but also police officers feeling that they're always under scrutiny. A bigger issue really than the accountability boards, based on the conversations I've had with law enforcement, are bills. It was a bill that dealt with defining the use of force and what is appropriate use of force. And it basically defined it as so in the eye of the beholder of a jury of non-trained people that it makes police feel very worried that if they end up having to tackle somebody and then maybe they hold them down for a second longer than the person likes, that they're going to be under attack and they're going to have somebody coming after them, coming after their ability to be a police officer and coming after their livelihood. There was also legislation. There were several omnibus big bills. There was also legislation that dealt with allowing for the public to see the discipline records of police officers. The problem, you could argue that if an officer has done something wrong, you could argue that maybe that should be public. But this bill, one of the bills even allowed for if something is unfounded, if an officer is, if there's a complaint about the officer and then it's investigated and they've found that there's no merit to it, that should obviously stay private. But the way the law passed, it's going to allow people to go see, you know, Officer Smith had three people complain about them. Well, if you're doing your job as a police officer, you're probably going to have some of the people that you arrest complain. And so there's a lot of problems with what was passed. There were some positive things that actually law enforcement was mostly supportive or liked the idea of. And there were some reforms that, you know, there was more funding and more opportunities for officers that need, like, someone to talk to, need more mental health resources, particularly in some of these areas like Baltimore City where they're facing trauma every day. There were things that were part of the discussion that were good, but unfortunately they got folded into folded into bills with a bunch of other bad things. So I opposed all of the final bills on, I say so-called police reform. To me, it was sort of it was more police retribution than police reform.
Right,
it was saying, hey, there have been a few problems in police, and there are areas that could have been, a lot of law enforcement officials have said, yeah, there's things we can improve upon and we want to improve upon, but it became very much a sort of a left-wing grab bag of what like I said, police retribution as opposed to real sort of common sense reforms.
Had the George Floyd incident not happened in Minneapolis when Derek Chauvin convicted of murdering Floyd ultimately but put his knee on his neck, would we be talking about any of this, Senator Reedy?
I don't know. You know, several years ago in 2016, we've actually passed some reforms in law enforcement that passed with a bipartisan support because we worked out a lot of those. I was on the committee at the time in the Senate. Every senator's on one standing committee. There are four of them. At the time, I was on the Judicial Proceedings Committee, which gets all of these issues. Last year, I was no longer on that committee, but I was on the committee several years ago. And we worked through a lot of things that people said they thought was a problem in policing. We had law enforcement come in and explain some of, and really, it was a negotiation. It was a, hey, we think this is a problem. Law enforcement comes in, the police and sheriffs come in, and we talk through issues. And we ended up with some reforms that most people felt was a pretty fair thing to deal with. But then years later, we're coming back with the George Floyd thing. I mean, obviously, that was a terrible thing that happened. And that person that did that, I'm happy they were convicted. But I do think it made – I think we would have probably been having some conversations. Some of the reforms, some of the changes probably would have happened. But certainly, it gave this sort of fierce extremism about the police are just inherently racist and bad. That really came out of a lot of that. From what we saw from a lot of these really liberal interest groups and legislators that were pushing the police legislation.
What does a bipartisan compromise look like in Annapolis when it does happen?
Well, generally, what happens is that the committee, in the committee that gets the bills, the Republicans are a minority on the committees too, but. Republicans who are respected, that have worked hard, that are trying to, that respected because they know their stuff, not respected because they give in. It's actually you're respected for being principled, but knowing your stuff. It's listening to the different. Whenever there's a bill, it doesn't always break down on partisan lines either. When there's a bill dealing with a big problem or a big issue, hearing the different people that are affected, both the people who want a bill to pass to fix a problem and the people who say we don't need the bill to pass, we don't need to do that to fix this problem, and really hearing all of those sides and coming up with the bill starts out one way, but then you listen to the people who would be impacted. You try to get rid of unintended consequences. You try to determine, is this really a problem, and do we need legislation to solve it, or could it be something that doesn't need a law? I'm big on that. I don't. Oftentimes, people will come with a bill and say, "I want to pass this bill because of this problem." Well, a little bit of investigation and digging, you find it. Well, actually, it's really just an issue where the state government entity might, the state government agency may be interpreting it wrong, or there's some private sector solution to it. So, compromise looks like determining we do need a bill, but making sure that all sides that it impacts have an opportunity to weigh in. And that's the way to move forward and have a bill that works to help everybody in a situation as best as possible. Unfortunately, what happens when something like police reform becomes a mantra, becomes like an article of faith, as opposed to using reason and logic and facts? It's like, well, we got to pass this bill because it says it's the Police Reform Act, or we got to pass this bill because it's against. Some other terror. The title of the bill says it's going to stop some other bad thing. If you have to pass the bill. Well, sometimes the bill may not be written particularly well. You got to work through those issues. So that's what compromise looks like. A lot of times you hear about compromise, like the word bipartisan gets thrown around, and a lot of people, like even me, roll their eyes a little because it has this tone of it's just mushy and everybody gets along. It's not really about it. Compromise to me is about making sure that we've looked at everything surrounding an issue and tried to examine all of the unintended consequences that could result from changing a law or getting rid of a law or passing a new law, and make sure that everybody who's affected has had their opportunity to come and express their viewpoint, and then try to glean from that what we ought to do. Doesn't always happen, but I think that's what compromise looks like, is a bill that a lot of people in both parties can support because they feel like, hey, this law, either getting rid of this old law or making a change to the law, will actually affect positively this problem, and it takes into account all the people involved as best as possible. So when we can do that, that's good compromise. When it becomes a thing where, well, we all have to vote for this on the left because, this interest group wants it, or on the right, either way, that's when it's not a good thing.
You're listening to the Four State Focus Show right here on WFMD and WFRE. Our guest today is Maryland State Senator Justin Reedy. He represents Carroll County, and we're talking about a plethora of things. I want to transition to the biggest problem or issue that you believe Maryland State residents will face in the upcoming year. From a lawmaker's standpoint, what is the biggest challenge or problem that we have in the state collectively, Senator Reedy?
Well, you know, obviously right this minute, everybody is concerned about health, the state of the healthcare system, hospitals being full right now. And there's a lot has been talked about with that. And I obviously want everybody to stay healthy and be safe. I'm against government mandates, and I'm against trying to force people to do anything they don't want to do. I think people, as it relates to their health, as it relates to vaccines, should talk to their doctor, make the decision that's right for them. I tell people all the time on health, on vaccines, I have people in my life that are vaccinated and people that are not. I tell people, look, don't take a vaccine or a medicine or not take a vaccine or medicine because of politics. But I support the right of people to have their own self-determination. With all that said, I know COVID is on everybody's mind right this minute. I think the biggest issue our state faces long-term is from both a health and an economic standpoint is Maryland is way too expensive of a state to live in. Our cost of living is extremely high, and our jobs are largely tied to government sources. So my belief is that this year, this session, we actually have an opportunity we actually have a surplus in a big surplus, which is rare in our state. We need to be looking at ways that we can make Maryland much, much more affordable to live in for working families, for job creators, especially small businesses, and our retirees. Because long term, if we can't keep a lot of great people here, we start to lose out on the benefit of having, say, retired people here with disposable income who also can be a part of their community and help their family. Working families struggle and can't quite make ends meet, and it causes a lot of problems there. And if you don't have a strong private sector business environment, you're going to find most of your jobs tied to government, which Maryland, that's a benefit to Maryland as far as the revenues we get from taxes, people having well-paying government jobs. But at some point, the governments shift, they retrench, they cut. So you want to have a strong private sector job market. And that's a big challenge for us. We see it not just in our rural areas. I see it in our rural areas, you know, where we need to make it more competitive and better for small businesses and businesses in rural areas. But you also see in cities like Baltimore that don't have all that federal government largesse. They're not safe there, number one, which is another issue, crime. But also there's not a strong private sector job market for people who are trying to pull themselves up. So to me, the cost of living and making our state more affordable and family-friendly, family and retirement-friendly, is really important for the future of our state.
It is election year. Obviously, November 8th, we will elect a new governor. What does this session look like, knowing that Larry Hogan is a lame duck governor and we're going to have a new governor next year? Do you find yourself governing any different? Is the thought process different, or is that just something that's going to happen? You have no control over it, and you just work with the people that you're face-to-face with every day.
Well, your last point, I certainly always try to work closely with the people that we have to deal with. And even though it's an election year, I try to keep focused when I'm in Annapolis in session. It's hard to say you don't think about politics because we're human and we all think about it being an election year. But it's our job to work together as best as possible. As I've expressed, sometimes that can be frustrating, but it is our job. As far as how we interface with the governor leaving, my hope is that we can push through some of the initiatives that the governor has tried before that haven't gotten through, particularly tax relief for retirees. And we need tax relief for all our retirees. A lot of times there's talk about tax relief for a certain group of retirees, and I've supported that, like military and police and fire. And I'm all for trying to exempt more of their retirement pay from taxes, but I want to see relief for everybody because I think that's really important for us to do. And that's been something the governor's tried before. So really pushing on things that I agree with him on, not that I agree with him on everything, but certainly on tax relief and on fiscal responsibility, I'm 100%, we're in lockstep on that. And so there's a push there because he'll be leaving. We don't know who the next governor will be. So I think you have to impact, that does impact the urgency that you want to get something done. But mostly it's the job is in front of us and we're trying to work on policies. I'm working on policies to try to improve our state in a number of different areas. And I'm also watching out for bad bills, bad proposals that I think would be negative for our state. And that's, to me, that's actually the number one job of a legislator, is really watching to be sure we don't do something stupid or something that could have a, as I mentioned earlier, negative unintended consequences down the road because it's a feel-good kind of idea. So I'm always trying to watch that, as well as, you know, putting forth some legislation of my own to try to address and fix problems.
You mentioned redistricting, and many think, including myself, the redistricting, as the Democrats have laid it out, is unconstitutional, doesn't make sense. It allows the Democrats to gain the upper hand in future elections. It's in the court's hands now. What do you think about the process? Why is it so skewed one way to the left, and what can we do about it? What do voters need to know about how redistricting may affect them?
Well, for congressional, you're right, it's in the courts. We are about to, in the next week, pass a state legislative redistricting map. So that's your state senators and state delegates. And the governor put forth a very fair, common sense map, just like he did on the congressional. And the Democrats are basically throwing that in the trash and passing their own map, which is also gerrymandered. It sort of mangles some different districts. It won't visually look quite as bad as the congressional map, just because it's a lot smaller districts. But it's not good. What that, I expect they will pass that. The governor actually can't veto the state legislative map. It's a resolution. It's a long story. It's different than the congressional redistricting, so he won't be able to veto it. He doesn't support their map. But then it will, if it passes, and it passes this very, you know, in my view, gerrymandered map, it's going to also go to court, and we'll see what happens. What people can do is certainly make their voice heard to their state legislators. What happens is, again, you've got a heavily dominated, Democrat-dominated state legislature, and their excuse for passing a gerrymandered congressional map was, well, the Republicans are doing it in other parts of the country, so we've got to pass a gerrymandered map here too. Well, number one, looking at it, some of the Republican states that were accused of gerrymandering, they didn't end up going quite as far as they were accused of. But even so, my attitude on that is we should do the right thing here. But for state legislative map, there's really not an excuse there to pass a gerrymandered map, because that has nothing to do with who controls Congress. So I would encourage people listening, if they really care about this issue, they should care, because if we don't have competitive elections and fair districts, you end up where it's really hard to have the kind of policy debate and dialogue that needs to happen. If people go to Annapolis as a state senator or a state delegate and they have literally no fear of losing a general election, if their only concern is making sure they're the most liberal or the most conservative and winning their primary, their Republican or Democratic primary, there's no incentive to compromise. I mean, there's no incentive to try to find the best policy. It's just about, in Maryland, I'm going to go as hard left as I can to make sure I don't lose my Democratic primary. And so this is why it's important, even if you're a voter that is a Democrat that's listening, you want a fair process and fair maps. I would encourage people, you know, we've got, you know, Frederick is split. You have some Democratic state legislators and some Republican state legislators. If you're listening and you're in Frederick County, be sure you contact your state senator, your state delegates. Look, if you don't know who they are, look them up. In Carroll County, same thing, contact us. I mean, I think our delegation's been mostly supportive of a fair map. I think we've pretty much all mostly been supportive of it. It's really important to understand that process. And if somebody is not willing to support a fair map, I think you need to remember that at election time. I think that's really important, because if we say, and most everybody says they don't like gerrymandering, but the question is, when you actually have to go vote on election day, do you remember who was against gerrymandering and who was for it, or is that not really an issue you care about? That's the question. And so I always challenge voters, hold us accountable, you know, hold us accountable for this issue, because in Maryland, you know, if we have competitive and fair districts, it'll actually yield a better policy outcome. Maryland's a center left state. We're not going to be a red state that statewide, but we're not a far left state. People, I think, are more in the middle.
And thank God for that, Senator Reedy.
No, I agree. We need more balance in our legislature. It's a huge issue. We need more political balance. I'm real conservative. I mean, anybody asks you, I'm very conservative. I have a very strong conservative voting record. But I also understand, I'd like to get us to be at least more balanced, you know, at least a little more balanced, so that we have, like I said, better outcomes for the people.
All right, Senator Reedy, we are up against the clock. We thank you so much for your time. Stay warm. Stay out of the snow. It's
thank
supposed
you.
To come down really hard. If somebody wants to learn more about State Senator Justin Reedy, where can they go in the final 20 seconds?
JustinReedy.com. That's spelled R-E-A-D-Y, JustinReedy.com. I'm on Facebook. Senator Reedy is my Facebook handle. And on Twitter, it's Justin Reedy. Justin, R-E-A-D-Y. So any of those places, you can follow me, and kind of happy to hear from people anytime.
All right, Senator Reedy, God bless. Thank you so much. You've been listening to the 4-State Focus Show right here on WFMD and WFRE. Stay blessed. Have a great weekend.
4-State Focus has been a public service of News Radio 930 WFMD.